With co-author Kevin Mattson, Eric Alterman, the Nation media columnist and author of What Liberal Media, traces post-war liberal ideals through multiple segments of American society, focusing on politicians as well as activists, intellectuals, visionaries, and outspoken members of the entertainment industry. The book conveys liberals' passion for change. According to Alterman, liberals have fueled their cause with the promise of American life and visions of national greatness, seeking to transform the White House, the halls of Congress, the courts, the worlds of entertainment, law, media, and the court of public opinion. The book, again, is entitled The Cause, The Fight for American Liberalism from Franklin Roosevelt to Barack Obama. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Eric Alterman back to the roundtable. Eric, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you with us. You know, it may be an odd place to start the interview, but we were just talking because Bruce Springsteen was in town last night, and we went to the show, and he just put on an amazing performance. You write a lot.
Where did he play?
At the Times Union Center in Albany.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah, he does good shows in Albany. Albany's a good place for him.
It's a great place. And you write about him in the
I've seen him in Albany.
Really?
30 years ago.
It's fascinating because you write about him of talking about almost being this president of this new cultural America, and being through the music being a spokesperson and continuing to be over several decades.
Well, I don't think he's been a spokesman for several decades. I think that there have been three times: first in 1975, and then with Born to Run, then 1984 and 85 with Born in the USA. Then, beginning with the release of The Rising after 9/11 and the Kerry and Obama elections, at that point he accepted this role whereby he put the symbolism of the role he had played in the culture to work for politics. I do think, though, I don't develop this that much in the book now that I think about it, I do think he represents a kind of synthesis of 1930s liberalism and contemporary liberalism. In other words, he's an economic populist, but he likes gay people and immigrants and so forth. And he manages to put these two things together so that if the country were nothing but Bruce Springsteen fans, somebody with those politics could be president. But the way it is now, very few politicians have been able to put together that synthesis in a way that gets millions of votes.
And you write in the book, and it sort of comes full circle of his embracing Pete Seeger and having a rousing version of "This Land Is Your Land" during the inauguration.
Yeah, I was there for that. It brought tears to my eyes, and I must say I was a much bitter sap than I should have been in terms of what I felt could be accomplished by this administration, or what it actually wanted to accomplish. I really did think we were entering a new moment in our politics, and I was wrong. If anything, the country's become more right-wing under Barack Obama. And that's not necessarily his fault, but it's not something he's really tried to address either.
So let us go back to the beginning and dig into what brought you to this subject. The title of the book is The Cause, The Fight for American Liberalism from Franklin Roosevelt to Barack Obama. What I find interesting is that aspect of a fight. Why does it have to be a fight?
Well, because there are a lot of people who don't want it to happen. So if it's going to happen, you have to fight for it.
And how has that fight manifested itself from the time of Roosevelt to Obama?
Well, it's changed over time. In fact, the changes are what has made it harder to make the fight. When it was a straightforward economic fight, it was difficult, but it was clear, and people could get behind it, and everybody sort of knew which side they were on. If you were not on the side of the rich or on the side of business, then you were on the side of the people. And that side won a lot of elections. When it became a matter of fighting discrimination and changing the way people live their lives and saying certain kinds of beliefs were no longer acceptable, the whole thing got a lot more complicated and more difficult for politicians to navigate. The great irony is that the side that's hard to navigate is the side that won. Cultural liberalism is a great success in America. It's on the march, whereas economic liberalism is kind of moribund. And yet economic liberalism not only is the side that makes winners out of politicians, but it's the foundation of successful cultural liberalism. So I think that liberals have made a terrible mistake in allowing the economic side to wither as the cultural side has flourished.
So when you look at the current state of liberalism in a Barack Obama presidency, in a re-election year, how do you see that state of liberalism?
Well, that's what I was just referring to, in that cultural liberalism is thriving and improving, and, you know, gay marriage is going to be the law of the land increasingly.
Right, but then you say about the economic side, but when you put it all together, I mean, can one trump the other, or do both have to work in harmony?
Well, it depends. Only one out of five Americans calls themselves liberal, and fewer than that even believe that the government can do any good for them. So as long as that second number is so low, liberals are going to keep losing elections, and poor people are going to keep getting screwed. In the meantime, there will be lots of success, for gays, for women's rights, for other cultural issues. Television and the movies will continue to portray lifestyles that Rick Santorum finds abhorrent, and that will grow. So it'll be a pretty good country if you're well-to-do, and a terrible country if you're not. And that's not the vision of liberalism.
What brought you to the subject of looking at a history?
Well, it's my ninth book, and I'm kind of writing my biography. I'm a liberal, and I'm a historian. So it was sort of a natural thing for me to do. I've written a lot of books about different aspects of politics and culture. Wrote one about Bruce Springsteen, but the rest of my books are all sort of about the way ideas operate in our culture. And I was interested in tracing the relationship between ideas and politics as it related to liberalism. And nobody's written a history of liberalism really since the 1970s, so I felt like it was my topic.
How do you think that term liberal has, I mean, obviously it's had its ups and downs. Where are we now, do you think?
Oh, we're definitely in a downtime. And it's a product of two things. It's a product, first, of liberals losing their self-confidence in the 1960s and 70s and 80s, first by being attacked by the left and then by being attacked by the right and not really knowing how to respond. But more than that, it's this relentless and incredibly well-funded and disciplined attack by the right, by Fox News, by the Wall Street Journal, by the Heritage Foundation, that has been adapted by much of the mainstream media. So when people say the liberal media, actually the media is not merely not liberal, it's anti-liberal, because it adopts the terms of debate of the right. And it's put liberals on the defensive, so that what ends up happening is that most people still have liberal policy goals. They agree with liberals on what should be done, but they're loath to call themselves liberals.
Eric Alterman is our guest. The name of the book, The Cause, The Fight for American Liberalism from Franklin Roosevelt to Barack Obama. We will continue our conversation with Eric Alterman after the short break. Eric Alterman is a best-selling author, award-winning journalist and historian, as well as distinguished professor of English and journalism at Brooklyn College and CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. He is a columnist for The Nation. His new book is The Cause, written with Kevin Mattson, The Fight for American Liberalism from Franklin Roosevelt to Barack Obama. So as we look at this re-election year and the president, as the campaign, as we get nearer to a general election, where does that leave the president when it comes to liberalism? Because there's those who obviously on the right who are going to say that he's too liberal, and there's those on the left who are going to say he's not liberal enough. So how do you balance that?
Well, the president is not a liberal. I mean, he may have been a liberal before he became president, but he hasn't governed as a liberal. He's governed as a conservative. The discretionary part of the budget is in terms of what the government does to improve the health, education, and safety of its people, excluding the entitlements and the defense budget and the debt, is smaller than it's been in since before the Great Society. It's smaller than it was under Ronald Reagan, smaller than it was under George W. Bush. So by that measurement, he's not a liberal. He's a social liberal, but again, he doesn't support gay marriage. His IRS is deporting people at a faster rate than the Bush administration did. He's been terrible on civil liberties. So to call him, to say he's too liberal is nonsense. It's almost as nonsensical as to say that he's a socialist or a Muslim or a terrorist or was born in Kenya. The term has no meaning if you think Barack Obama is too liberal compared to what liberals have done in the past and what liberals do in other countries. It's like saying that Americans pay too high taxes. Well, we're taxed less than we have been in 30 years, and we're taxed less than every other industrial democracy. So I think that what conservatives have succeeded in doing is imposing their ideology on our discourse. Conservatives think all government spending is bad, except for military spending. And they think, you know, and they think that the smaller the government, the better. And that's just not true. Government can play a role in our lives, and it can improve them, and it can invest in our economy to improve everybody's lot. As a matter of fact, it so happens that the economy has performed much better under Democratic presidents historically than it has under Republicans. So has the stock market. The stock market's been terrific under Barack Obama compared to what it did under George W. Bush. And that's a consistent message in all of post-war American history. So I think that what liberals have to do is talk about reality. There was a joke that was made on Jon Stewart's show once by, I think, Colbert, that reality has a liberal bias, but actually it does. What we call liberal in our society, in many respects, is just common sense devoid of right-wing ideology.
So where does that leave liberals who are looking to vote for someone who will represent their views?
I think they should grow up. Professional politicians have a job to do, and that's to remain in office. That's why if they lose their office, then they're not professional politicians anymore. The job of voters, the job of liberals, is to force those politicians to do what liberals want them to do in order to stay in office. So voting is not therapy. You know, voting is not about making you feel good. Voting is about dealing with the choices that you're offered in an election time and then trying to improve those choices in between election time. So if they don't like the choices that they're offered, they should work in the next 4 years to improve them. That's what I think I do. But just to say, oh, this guy fundamentally disagrees on something that's important to me, so I'll allow somebody who's even worse to become president, which is what Nader voters did in 2000. Mm. Well, you know, thank you very much for the Iraq War, et cetera.
Have you written off Barack Obama as a liberal, or do you think if reelected that you will see a more liberal president?
Well, you know, I have a hope I'll see a more liberal president, but I don't really think I will. I think Barack Obama responds to the environment that he's in. And I think right now that environment is dominated by the power of money. And I think until we can reduce the power of money in our system, we're not going to have a very liberal president.
Why do you think that the effect of the conservative movement, especially in looking at the Tea Party movement, of what impact they have had on the dialogue and why that was so profound at the moment?
Well, I think the media are quite lazy. The Tea Party, we've always had a kind of Tea Party movement in the Republican Party. There's always been about 30% or so of people who will vote for the most right-wing candidate they can. Bush still had the approval of these people, even though he led the country to total disaster in most respects. And that number didn't change The Tea Party was never popular with more than about 30% of the country. But those people can dominate primaries because very few people vote in primaries. You can win a primary with support of 10% of the populace of your locality. So they were very well organized and they were very motivated. And the press couldn't distinguish between the fact that they were motivated and the fact that they represented a small minority of people. So they took over a part of the Republican Party, and this cost the Republicans the Senate in 2010. If they hadn't had to deal with these terrible Tea Party nominees, they would have won enough seats to take over the Senate. So it was actually a net negative in that respect, but it was good in other respects for them because it gave them energy and enthusiasm, and of course they took over the House, and they controlled the public dialogue, and because they were so recalcitrant, they got Barack Obama to make an awful lot of concessions that he probably didn't need to make and shouldn't have made, but they were able to drive the conversation. I think that period is over.
For you, you write about a lot of different people in the book, and it is a, as I said, it is a history of liberalism. For you,
but you're right, though, to point out, it's a history of liberalism told to people. It's not like a policy history. It's a people history.
Right. Who are the heroes?
Who are the heroes? I get asked that a lot. I don't really believe in heroes. I admire Ted Kennedy a great deal for his stick-to-itness, for his willingness to keep coming back and coming back and coming back and then make the deal and let other people get credit, even at great personal cost to himself.
So why not believe in that? Why not believe in the heroism of that?
Well, I think there is a quiet heroism to that, but there's an awful lot I don't admire in Ted Kennedy.
Mm.
So that's what I mean about heroes.
Okay.
I think people act heroically without necessarily being
right.
Heroes.
Okay, heroic acts.
Yeah, well, the people I most admire are the people who tried to deal, who were caught. I mean, obviously, I admire the hell out of Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
I admire the people who put their bodies, John Lewis, people who put their bodies on the line and showed great physical and moral courage in the civil rights movement. I admire someone like Gloria Steinem, whose picture is on the cover, for all the abuse she took to make very liberal arguments on behalf of women's rights. I admire the intellectuals who were caught in between the left and the right and tried to work out a position that they could respect themselves for, even though they were abused and attacked during the student riots of 1960 and so in the 1960s. I personally relate most to the intellectuals, so you know I have a great deal of admiration for Reinhold Niebuhr, for Richard Hofstadter, for Richard Rorty. Of course, I admire Bruce Springsteen. There's a lot of things I deeply admire about John Kennedy and a lot of things I deeply dislike about John Kennedy. I really admire Robert Kennedy at the end of his life. I don't admire him so much in the early part of his life. Barney Frank is someone I admire. But again, there's a difficult balance to be made between following one's ideals and doing the deal that gets things actually done. And not that many liberals have been able to master that particular skill, and that's a really important one.
The name of the book is The Cause, The Fight for American Liberalism from Franklin Roosevelt to Barack Obama. It is published by Viking. Eric Alterman, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Great pleasure. Again, The Cause, The Fight for American Liberalism from Franklin Roosevelt to Barack Obama, published by Viking and co-written by Kevin Mattson.